You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need.
Hey, hey.
Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need.
Hey, hey.
Said I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me? Bad times are coming.
1209, this is WGN. I'm John Williams. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Orion Samuelson, I don't know if you've heard the word, might be joining us briefly for this segment. Hi, Big O.
Hello there. I hope you're doing well today, John.
I am, O. There's two things I just wanted to get out. And first was the intersection of public health and business for all of us. Our news click, the daily web poll question at WGNradio.com asks you, how anxious are you to open up businesses? There were protests in Springfield and across the country, protesters wanting their governors to go ahead and open things up. Others want the businesses to stay shuttered until it's deemed quote-unquote safe. It's a non-scientific survey, but 84% of you are saying stay the course. Still, 16% of you are saying no, let's open it up, or you're not so sure. 84-16 goes our vote online, and we'll continue to follow this conversation on Facebook. I'm WGN King John on Facebook, and talk more about what the science is behind this throughout the week. The other question I wanted to bounce off of you, Orion, was I saw still more reporting over the weekend of farmers plowing their crops under, and yet it was pointed out to me that there are long lines at food banks around the country, people lining up to get food because they're financially distressed. It's just a shame to see the food going under when people are standing in line and need those groceries.
I would agree with you, but that's the difference between the economy, non-agriculture, and agriculture. I said, for about every day for the last couple of months, we don't have a food shortage, but we do have a concern about labor, and I just got word shortly before noon that another meatpacking company, JBS, that's a Brazilian company, but they're a major producer and exporter of beef. They announced the indefinite closure of Worthington, Minnesota's pork production facility. They do that to wind down operations over the next 2 days at the minimum to sanitize and clean the factory, because in the meatpacking business, you can't keep a 6-foot separation. And, we've seen too many COVID-19 cases coming out of the meatpacking plants because of the fact that most of them are migrant workers that come across the border from Mexico, most of them legal, but some of them not. But they don't have the screening or the care that I think we're finally realizing in the packing facilities, that we've got to do a better job. So I still say we do not have a food shortage, but when farmers who have invested money in seed and in fuel and in crop protection companies, when you see that they don't have a market for their product, mm-hmm. what else can they do with it?
There's a 60 Minutes report, I think it was over the weekend, and it pointed right. out the irony that we need migrant workers to harvest our crops, work in our meat processing plants, etc. And we've been very... the new administration has made that a platform plank of theirs to keep the undocumented aliens out. And yet we all know full well that they're doing a lot of that farm labor for us. And if they aren't doing that work right now, some of those crops don't get picked. Some of that meat doesn't get processed. In a way, we're relying on them right now more than ever.
I would agree with you on that. And of course, that's a part of the changing times, because when I grew up on the dairy farm, I did the cow milking and we didn't have migrant laborers to do it. But today, with the opportunity to go to work at fast food restaurants, a lot of young Americans don't want to work that hard to go into the meat processing industry or to go into the harvesting industry, because right now much of the produce that we see showing up in the stores here in the Midwest comes in from Arizona and California, because they can still produce their crops, and they're doing so, but you can't plant crops in this temperature here in the Midwest at this point in time. And so you've got that playing along with the transportation facilities to move the stuff from the farm to the supermarket or the grocery stores.
Orion, give us an agribusiness report in just a few minutes. We'll check the stocks as well. The world is, if nothing else, innovating these days. Jim Dahlke joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, senior editor at Chicago Inno. Hi, Jim. Welcome back. How are you, sir?
Hey, John. Doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
So a lot of folks went running, and there's a group that came up with an innovative way to manage safe jogging right now. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, I think with everybody at home and a lot of brick-and-mortar gyms closed, I think everybody's thinking about exercise and fitness and finding ways to just kind of stay fit during this kind of lockdown period that we're in. And a Chicago startup called Charge Running, launched about 3 years ago, has created basically virtual coaching for runners. So with your headphones in, you can be listening to music, but there is actually a live coach in your ear with you as well, who's kind of keeping track of your pace and can kind of help give you some motivation and tips for keeping going and keeping that running going strong. And they've also created kind of a really virtual environment to connect with other runners as well. So even though you won't be running in a physical pack, you'll still have that sort of digital pack with you, and you'll be able to kind of see the run times of the other runners who are in that run with you, see their kind of their pace and their distance. And it's a way to kind of really have a social running app that's sort of perfect for our social distancing period that we're in.
Sounds like Peloton without the cycle.
Exactly, and they operate similarly. So they've got a $10 per month charge. So it's $10 to use it. So you know, if you can't be going to kind of your normal gym right now, and they still want to get that exercise and kind of have some of the bells and whistles that sort of come with other workout studios, it could be an interesting alternative. And you know, I think it's interesting right now what's happening with the fitness industry, is a lot of these traditional gyms are really, really hurting right now. I would not be surprised to see kind of these legacy gym players start to adopt these digital technologies, whether it's acquiring a startup like this or even just kind of working with them on a licensing basis, just to incorporate more digital tools, because, you know, gyms right now are hurting big time. And you would imagine that a lot of companies would be kind of encouraged by partnering with some of these digital upstarts.
Do you know, do the runners interact with each other or with the coach, or do they just all hear the coach?
So yeah, you can do some interacting with the coach, and I think with the runners, it's a little bit kind of after the fact. So it's like connecting with folks, you know, maybe messaging after you see their time or seeing kind of the pace that they were able to run. So I think some of the interaction happens after the fact, but I mean, the biggest thing I think is just kind of having that running community to kind of encourage everybody and motivate folks to continue to improve their pace.
Charge Running, you know, I just think there's a lot of businesses out there, industries that are on the sidelines, essentially. Lord knows gyms are, like LA Fitness or whatever, and yet they have to watch other people innovating and stealing some of their market share or changing their business when they come back. And I'll bet they are anxious to not only get back, but realize they may have to be different when they do. Do you know if any of these gyms that people subscribe to, like in LA Fitness, are offering refunds or giving people credit for the months they're missing on their contracts?
So I know, you know, I'm a Planet Fitness user, and I can tell you that they have, you know, paused our membership now. So, you know, they've already gone ahead and stopped charging folks while their businesses are closed. And I know a lot of studios are offering that similarly. So, you know, I think what will be interesting to kind of see is once the shelter in place order is lifted, what happens, right? Does the switch get immediately turned on at these places? Do you have to kind of actively say, hey, I'm ready to come back to the gym? Because I think even if doors open, it will still be curious to see if consumers are eager to jump back into the gym or if they stick to some of these kind of digital products and sort of do exercise on their own.
Well, they're learning to do that now for meal delivery startups. How's that going? Because some of the most famous names in that business have been getting kicked around lately. What's happening with meal delivery groups?
That's right. So, you know, meal delivery is kind of in two buckets. So you have the Grubhub, the Uber Eats, the Postmates kind of bucket where they're bringing sort of restaurant delivery. And then you kind of have another area of meal delivery where the meals are kind of prepared already, very easy to sort of put together. So it's kind of meal kit slash prepared meal delivered straight to your door. And so I wrote a story last week about kind of that latter bucket. So companies who have sort of prepared meals or meal kits here in Chicago focused on delivery within the city. And these companies are actually doing really well. So they're finding that, you know, families who, you know, aren't able to go out to eat at restaurants and are super, super crunched for time because they are, you know, working full time at home. They're doing childcare full time at home. They're working on homeschooling full time. Really, they need really quick and easy meal options. And companies like Tovala, for example, they're a startup in Chicago. They created a smart oven and a meal delivery service. So their oven is a really, really interesting way of cooking meals really effectively and efficiently. You can scan the barcode on the meal delivery that they bring to your door, and it automatically knows the perfect method to cook it with baking and broiling. And really kind of what they've seen is an uptick, not only in the amount of orders for their food delivery service, but new customers as well. So people are buying more ovens than ever. They're increasing their order capacity through the meal delivery service. And it's something we're seeing with other startups like Eat Purely, which is a Chicago-based healthy meal delivery service. They're seeing an uptick in business as you know, they're able to bring food kind of really on demand to folks and prepared, ready to go. Home Chef is another big company in Chicago. It was acquired a couple years ago for $200 million by Kroger. They offer meal kits, so they're a little more like Blue Apron. They said business has really, really skyrocketed both in store as people have kind of been doing that pantry building, so grabbing items that they can kind of have in the fridge and the freezer for weeks on a time, as well as their online business has really taken off.
Tovala, T-O-V-A-L-A. So they manufacture the smart oven, the oven that goes on your countertop?
That's right. So they've created really a kind of a brand new kitchen device. This is in addition to an oven or a toaster or something else that you would have kind of on your countertop at home. And it's really kind of created a device that, you know, it kind of combines multiple different sort of high-tech cooking methods. And really what they say, it's really kind of a restaurant quality oven that they're able to bring to your countertop.
Yeah, but then are they also the ones that are selling the meal kits or the food specifically ready to pop in there?
Exactly. So they offer meals delivery. So it's about $12 a meal for their meal service, which will typically run you less than what you would get at, say, a Grubhub or an Uber Eats on a per meal basis. And yeah, so they offer a subscription meal delivery service as well.
Wow.
You can also cook non Tovala meals in their ovens as well.
And I wonder if you can take the Tovala meals and cook that in a traditional oven. I wonder what that oven of theirs costs.
Yeah, so their oven, I think, is about around $300, and I think it is less if you commit to kind of longer-term meal delivery subscriptions. So kind of the more meals you commit to buying, the you know, the cheaper the oven gets. But really, they kind of go hand in hand because
right.
The oven is really built for these meals. So it's got a really interesting kind of barcode scanner on it where you can scan the meal, pop it in, and it knows the exact amount of time, the exact heat to cook it. So it really, really is effortless cooking.
Boy, this is innovation in Chicago. Print with me. How many folks right now realize their home printer isn't up to snuff for all the printing they're asking it to do these days?
Oh, yeah. Print with Me is a really interesting example of a pivot story in Chicago. You know, we're seeing this kind of across the landscape where companies have kind of really seen their revenues decimated by the coronavirus and the stay-at-home orders. And, you know, Print with Me is a company that has put wireless printers in coffee shops, co-working spaces, apartment buildings, allowing you to wirelessly print kind of from those areas very, very easily. And coffee shops actually represented about 50% of the startup's business, and that really was completely decimated. Really, that half of their business was gone. And so they went through a really interesting pivot where now they're bringing delivery to printing. So you can print something, you know, click print from your computer at your home, and they will bring you your documents in 2 to 3 hours during the work week, which is pretty impressive, especially as, you know, most people are probably used to printing their documents within their office, whether they're personal documents or work documents, right? Not exactly everybody has a super high quality at-home printer. So your options for getting stuff printed if you do need physical printing paper is kind of limited. And so what they've done is a pretty actually dramatic pivot, one of the more interesting business shifts that I've seen so far from a Chicago startup, going from kind of a coffee shop printing company to a logistics business basically overnight.
I wonder, then they need their own delivery drivers, right? They need, I wonder, are they using Uber, or who's actually sending the documents back to your home?
Yeah, so they are onboarding drivers right now, and actually they're focusing on people who have been displaced and laid off due to the coronavirus from a previous job. So whether it's a restaurant worker or somebody who's been otherwise laid off. And so, yeah, they've got a small network of drivers, both in Chicago and Brooklyn, New York, which is just two markets that's rolling this out so far. And so they've got a handful of folks who are making these deliveries, and there's a delivery fee on top of the order price itself, which goes all to the driver. And so the drivers are able to pocket some money kind of during a challenging time for them. And, you know, the founders of Print With Me say that delivery operation is already kind of profitable for them specifically. So far, so good in terms of recouping some of that revenue that they lost from the coffee shop business.
Yeah, no kidding. I know that some of the food delivery people that are shopping for folks at grocery stores, say, and delivering food right to their doors, and there's always been that kind of service. More people are doing that now. And I understand some of those people, depending on the grocery order, get tipped rather nicely. It's not just an hourly income. It's not a lot, but the tips is where the money is. I don't know that folks are going to be tipping these delivery people, but it's just fascinating to see more people doing a delivery service that people need now. One last category I'd like you to comment on real quickly, Chicago men's skincare startup. What are you hearing, or what do you know about this?
Yeah, so the startup Oars and Alps, a company based in Chicago, they sell skincare for men, so really focusing on face lotion, deodorant, moisturizer for guys. They are, like many companies, are pivoting a bit and selling hand sanitizer. So hand sanitizer is now a part of what their product offerings are on their website. And, you know, they've seen a really big demand for that if there's been a hand sanitizer shortage, really, in many cities across the U.S. And they're doing some donation elements as well. So they're donating bottles to healthcare workers both in Chicago and New York.
That's Oars and Alps. Boy, if somebody can come up with the perfect one that kills the germs and the viruses, but also replenishes the moisture and the whatever I lost in my hand, because I think a lot of us are walking around with hands that don't feel like our own, and that's the price you have to pay. I wish that you could have your cake and eat it too, you know?
Totally, yeah. Their products, I think, go certainly hand in hand with the sanitizer and the lotion.
Yeah, interesting. As always, nice to talk to you. Let's visit again this time next week, shall we?
Sounds good, John. Thanks so much.
You betcha. Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at Chicago Inno. At 12:33, this is WGN Radio. You are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, another update on the markets in 10 minutes. Right now, Elise Glink joins us, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Elise, welcome back to the show. It's traditionally the time.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the show, Elise. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Okay, so it's spring. How's the real estate market doing, and how are people kind of getting around the problem of maybe being afraid to go into an open house or open up their own house?
So there's some positives and negatives. We got some early looks at what happened in March. Remember that COVID shutdown started happening around mid-March, and what that did was show some record-setting declines in the real estate industry. So a 10% decrease in new listings, a 9% total number of home sales in a single month. Those numbers are really unprecedented. You know, we've seen it before in different places where it's kind of built up to something like that, but in a basically what was a two-week period from the middle of the month to the end of the month, not so great. The good news is that the median home sales price actually continued to increase, which is suggesting that for sort of middle to the upper end of the housing market, sales are continuing.
Inventory overall, I understand, is down. People have just decided if they don't have to, they're not putting the house out there. I was talking to a client of ours here at WGN Radio, Amy Kite. You know Amy, and she was telling mm-hmm. me that for some people, particularly in some price points, they're able to get about what they're asking. It's like there isn't a virus market, and it's because competition is down. There's just not that many homes for some of the potential buyers out there.
Right. I think we talked last week about how the National Association of Realtors had suggested that they saw that the number of listings are down from where they should be, about 27%, but the number of buyers are also down about 27%. And so it's a slower market overall, particularly right now. But I can understand how she might see that some home prices are still holding up. We're not yet seeing home price declines anywhere. What we are seeing, though, are a lot of canceled deals, particularly in the commercial investment market. So for large rental buildings, investment properties, things that are really the price is judged based on the amount of rent that you can collect. Those kinds of deals, we see some of those falling apart. And then in terms of home prices, home sales, we're seeing some people struggle to close because all of a sudden, after they had decided to buy or they were selling their houses, people lost their jobs or went into, they just were furloughed. And so they don't actually show the income that they need to actually close on those mortgages. And so we have a bunch of people that I've heard from who are stuck in that position too.
Well, it sounds like there's the haves and the have-nots, right? Because so just to sort of repeat a couple of your numbers here, you said new home sales are off 10%, total sales off 9%, but you're not saying that the price for homes that are selling are off 9 or 10%, that those are holding relatively steady?
That is correct, that homes are overall nationally seem to be holding, the prices seem to be holding. So you're not seeing a comparable reduction that you're seeing in terms of the new listings or for the actual number of home sales. So that's good news for sellers.
I wonder if that means that homes are on the market a little longer than as a result of that.
So it's interesting. We don't have enough data yet to see how the average days on market is actually changing. It's just not enough time yet. But I'm seeing two things start to happen. One is that people are starting to be willing to buy sight unseen. So anecdotally, I know several people who have now bought and are scheduled to close homes they have never seen in person. And their own home sales, they are allowing very limited walkthroughs. And so in some cases, agents are taking their phones and literally live streaming, views for their buyers who are maybe out of town or even in town but don't want to go to a house.
Lise Glink's on the line. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Do you recall after 9/11, how fast did the market bounce back? Is there anything we can learn from then and apply it today?
Well, things didn't bounce back quite as quickly as you would have liked, right? 9/11 was a very difficult time for those of us who were watching real estate. People were completely weirded out, and understandably so. But after a couple of months, things started to bounce back. I think the question here is, and there was, remember that there, around 9/11, there was also a minor recession. This is a major, never-before-seen reduction of workforce. I mean, even back in the Great Depression, it took a lot longer to get to where we are now. So it's unclear whether this is going to bounce back in quite the same way. But SARS actually, which was back in 2003, there was a little bit more of an effect with SARS.
Really?
And it did take some months for it to come back. And then swine flu also had a measurable impact on the economy. Swine flu was back in 2009 and 2010, but that was a little bit complicated, those numbers, because that was right when we had our other recession. So the good news is that in anything we've seen, there's been a bounce back. The question is, does it bounce back before the end of this year, or is it another couple of years? And I think it could be a little slower this time.
Last thing, Elise, I know you made a list and you've actually referenced a couple of these points, but give me tips for buyers and sellers that you've got.
Right. I think you really have to be prepared to do more of this online right now. If you're closing be prepared if you're a seller. Sign your papers in advance. You're not going to go to the closing. You'll probably be happy about that. If you're buying, you're probably doing a drive-by right now. Title companies are being very, very cautious about letting anybody through the door, and so people are wiping down pens, they're wiping down their papers in order to get what is known in the industry as a wet signature, meaning that you cannot sign electronically. It's a wet signature, meaning like the ink from the pen has to dry. You also just want to be prepared to do these kinds of live streaming walkthroughs, and you want to make sure that your agent understands what you want to see. So if they're going to go to the house and walk around it, that you're saying to them, I want to understand who lives next door, behind, what the alley looks like, how the front lawns are, whatever it is that's important to you, so that the agent captures that for you.
Are movers taking a hit, Allied Van Lines, guys like that?
I think are less busy than they would probably like to be because fewer people are moving. So they do have some availability. This may be the time to negotiate a little bit of a better moving rate for yourself. And be sure there's a lot of things you have to think about right now, especially if you're going to have somebody else go into your house, pack you up, move you and unpack you in a new place. Think it through very carefully before you sign the bills of lading and your contract with them.
And anybody that's ever done that and has gotten a few prices knows that that can be a negotiation. So maybe the buyer is in the driver's seat there. Elise Glink on a phone line on Mondays, owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Nice to talk to you, Elise. Thanks for your help today.
You bet.
Back into the WGN Radio Newsroom. Steve, what do you see?
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The hotels are nearly empty, so they're coming up with ways to raise cash now for a stay later. For example, the Trip says some are offering bonds. Put up $100 now on a room, and in a couple of months, that $100 will be worth $150. Hotel vacancies have been around 90% during the pandemic. Keep your distance and virtually run with others. Charge Running is an app that allows users to virtually participate in live runs with coaches and other runners. Chicago Inno says Charge Running has seen an uptick in the number of new users since the pandemic began. And a Humboldt Park startup wants to make facial recognition harder. Reflectables are chunky glasses that shine out a person's face when viewed on a security camera. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Steve Bertrand, you got markets?
Yep, the Dow is down 276 points, the NASDAQ up a smidge, and the S&P 500 down 20.
Orion's got market news and numbers.
An Iowa beef processing plant that was idled after a coronavirus outbreak resumed production today. That's one day after the state said 177 workers there have tested positive. And the Iowa premium plant in Tama, Iowa, owned by National Beef, had suspended production after the company confirmed that multiple workers had the virus. Yesterday, the office of Governor Kim Reynolds said that 177 out of more than 500 National Beef workers tested were positive for coronavirus. So they're struggling to get those plants sanitized and thoroughly cleaned and getting them back on the production line. The governor's office also said yesterday another 84 employees of Tyson Foods had tested positive. And then today, the JBS company, that's a Brazilian-based company, but they have meat processing plants in the United States, announced an indefinite closure of the pork production facility at Worthington. Plant management said that JBS will continue to pay team members during plant closure. Other than that, I think I'm going to be spending a lot of time in the next few months simply announcing postponements and in some cases outright cancellation. As a matter of fact, I'm beginning to hear from the boards of directors of county fairs that they're taking a look at maybe not holding a county fair in the Midwest because of the amount of people that gather for a county fair. So we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll keep you informed. And, of course, we've already told you that for 78 years, the community of Harvard, Illinois, has saluted the dairy industry because 78 years ago, the dairy industry in McHenry County provided most of the milk for the Chicago consuming public. And so they saluted the dairy industry with a three-month or three-day celebration called Harvard Milk Days. That, however, has already been postponed. It will now be held not in June Dairy Month, but in the middle of October. That's Your Money on 720 WGN.
1248 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Reporter Amy Guth joins us Mondays at this time. I'm looking at your stories, Amy, and I don't know if there's one you particularly want to start with, but there's one that sort of jumps out at me. You want to see if we're on the same page?
My guess is Shake Shack.
Shake Shack is it.
Nice. Good. Great minds think alike. Indeed. Well, this is a really interesting story to me because there's been so much consternation and rumbling about how everything shook out with that Paycheck Protection Program, the small business loans that could become grants. And a lot of people were kind of questioning because it raised a lot of questions as well, how are we defining a small business? Because some really big businesses got this bailout. It was supposed to be 500 workers or less, but there's a little bit of a language loophole there about how many people are on site at a given site. So we saw big things like locally based Potbellies. We saw Shake Shack receiving a lot of money. So Shake Shack announced this morning that they were going to return the $10 million loan received under the Payment Protection Program. CEO Randy Garrudy and President Danny Meyer issued an open letter today and just said, you know what, we can't really earmark this, but we really hope this can be distributed to small restaurant businesses that are really, really in need. They say that they've secured a different access to capital and believe they can raise about $75 million through some investors. So, the CEO went on to say it didn't seem right to be taking that money when he saw smaller restaurants not getting the support that they needed.
I suppose this works two ways, right? If you really truly do have the money and can get away without taking the $10 million, then maybe you don't, particularly since when we do get a chance to go back to Shake Shack, or maybe I can order from them drive-through right now anyway, or curbside pickup, I'm going to remember Shake Shack fondly.
Yeah, I think, you know, right away this morning when that open letter went out from the president and CEO, a lot of noise, a lot of chatter on social media saying, hey, guys, remember this. And hey, if you have the ability to get takeout or delivery from Shake Shack, go for it. Support this kind of behavior. This is what we need. But also don't forget to support the small restaurants who are really struggling. So I think the next thing is we have to kind of wait and see, is that fund that ran dry in under 2 weeks for small businesses, is that going to be replenished? You know, a lot of economists are talking about how a lot of loans were already approved before it went dry. So there's potentially quite a bit of money that's already spoken for in a replenishment. So we might be looking at maybe even a third wave of that replenishment at some point just to help small businesses through this really critical time.
If they've got $100 million in cash on hand, are they being criticized for even filing for the government handout?
Yeah, there was some of that. And the CEO, Randy Garrudy, he mentioned that very thing. He said, you know, what we were looking at is we wanted to make sure we were covering all of our bases for our workforce. We didn't know. But now that we have this access to this other capital, we want to give this back. But yeah, there was some of that. There was, well, why was this company even applying for it if they had that, have that kind of cash on hand? You know, restaurants typically, when we're talking about a small business, a lot of local restaurants, the margins they report are around 3 to 5% profit. It's really small. So this is a really, really tough time for them. And I think a lot of local restaurants were kind of like, well, hang on, you know, a lot of smaller restaurants. So, you know, but all in all, I think people, the consensus is anecdotally that was the right move. And he is getting a lot of credit for returning that money.
What's the story now between J.B. Pritzker and this Illinois Senator Don Harmon? And I guess Harmon has sent a letter to his congressional representative trying to get some federal help for the state unemployment benefits.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a story to watch in the days and week ahead for sure. So Illinois Senate President Don Harmon has sent a letter to, as you said, and he's asked for a $40 billion bailout. That's for public employee pensions, to fund unemployment insurance, to aid hospitals and cities in Illinois, things like that. And according to his outreach, you know, he breaks it all down. And he wrote this letter. And the initial reaction from Pritzker was kind of like, well, you know, he's certainly free to reach out to whoever he wants to. Since then, a spokesperson added, like, that Don Harmon doesn't speak for us necessarily. So it seems like it did catch Pritzker and Pritzker's team pretty flat-footed it's pretty much in alignment with a lot of what Pritzker was saying. Like, hey, we're going to need $40 billion of federal relief. We're going to need some federal relief if we are going to make a balanced budget for Illinois, that which has been, you know, he has stated from the jump that that's been a really high priority in his administration after a lack of budget for a long time. So I think that's going to be something to watch, because very quickly that became a, oh, you did what? kind of a moment. I think everybody wants the same goal of to make sure the budget is balanced and there's not a big hole in the budget in Illinois, and that critical funding is received. But I think the thing they agree on is that some federal funding is going to be needed in order to do that. Remains to be seen how that's going to go. Immediately in Springfield, though, there was a lot of quickly it seemed like there was sides being drawn, you know, sides being taken. So we shall see in the days ahead how that continues to shake out.
It's an interesting dance between our governor and the federal government, not just the president, but maybe the federal government generally. He's been so critical of the federal response, J.B. Pritzker has, that while I understand his frustration, I don't want him to do anything to injure our chances for getting any sort of federal monies. And frankly, my own view is that the president is prickly enough that if you don't play that game right, you might do a disservice to your state. So it's kind of a fine dance for us in Illinois right now.
Yeah, I think I like to think Pritzker realizes that he has indeed, there is a line, but right, but he has been expressed a lot of frustration with the federal response during the entire COVID-19 pandemic so far. He's really been very clear in the daily press briefings of this is what I've asked for, this is what I've not received, or this is what I have received, even going so far as to, you know, procure his own supplies at one point through his own means, versus, you know, the president has also been very clear about, you know, what governors he feels are playing by the rules and who's not. So I think that's another one. You know, this is an interesting time that we're in which we're not used to having to wait and see that much, and we're having to do a lot of wait and see as things to continue to unfold, despite it being a really fast-moving story still.
What are you seeing for United? What's the latest on them?
Well, if you recall, last week we talked about a $5 billion bailout they received, 1.5 of that in a low-interest loan, the rest in federal money and grant form. And so they are expecting, this is a time of year where we start seeing some earnings reports for Q1, and I think everybody's kind of bracing for those to be pretty rough. United, in a preliminary filing, they have said that they're going to see $2.1 billion in loss for Q1. They decided to release that a little bit early. On a call, the CEO said that this is about, you know, we're trying to be transparent. They didn't release a full balance sheet with that. That's expected a little later. But really, this is, you know, really looking at just how I think a lot of people are bracing for just how rough it's going to be for airlines. We're expecting Delta's filings for Q1 on Wednesday, American and Southwest will be next week. So in addition to this, though, United said that they have secured $4.5 billion. They're looking to secure another $4.5 billion from the U.S. Treasury. That's in addition to the $5 billion last week. So despite these large amounts of money, you know, some of it already got already accounted for, and some of it still in pursuit, we're looking at really, really major losses for airlines, with it, you know, down 90%. I mean, it's really just a fraction of their capacity. So this week is where we see banks and airlines doing those Q1 earnings reports. And I think economists across the board are really bracing for exactly what that's going to look like, particularly in the banking sector. I think we have to look at business banking, personal banking, but also consumer credit. That's going to be a big tell of what the economic picture is right now.
We have not spent a lot of time talking about the credit markets and what's going to happen down the road on that. And I think that's a conversation you and I will probably need to have sooner than later. It's nice to hear you today, Amy. Thanks for your help.
Thanks so much, John.